NHPR's The Exchange podcast is brought to you in part by Granite State College, Keene State College, Plymouth State University, and the University of New Hampshire, your university system. Imagine what you can accomplish here.
The Exchange podcast also gets support from the New Hampshire Chiropractic Association, an organization of professionals providing a non-invasive, non-surgical approach to healthcare, tailoring treatment plans to meet individuals' needs. Learn more at nhchiropractic.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. How well poised is New Hampshire to bounce back from the pandemic's economic hit? That's what we're looking at today in The Exchange. We'll start by examining summer tourism, where state officials expect a banner year. Then we'll turn to real estate, with Concord and Manchester recently ranked among the nation's top 10 hottest housing markets. And finally, we'll drill into jobs, where employment is strong and where it's struggling. Now, we'll hear from several voices throughout the hour, and we're going to begin with Brian Gottlob. He's director of the state's Economic and Labor Market Information Bureau, and he's a principal at Polycon Economic Research. And Brian, a big welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Great to be here, Laura.
So before we get into the New Hampshire economy specifically and those topics I just mentioned, Brian, what national economic trends or numbers are you watching right now?
Well, it's interesting, Laura. This pandemic, if it's produced anything positive, it's a data nerd's dream come true, because there are so many data points that are coming out, new data points. The federal government, obviously, the employment numbers are important, labor force numbers are important. And we had a disappointing federal national jobs report last Friday. But the private sector has produced a lot of new data as people have looked to ascertain what's happening to the economy during the pandemic in a more timely manner. So we have data on how people are moving around. We have data on restaurant reservations. We have more data on businesses that are opened and closed and the hours that they're working. So there's a whole host of data that is, for me and for people like me, just fascinating.
Well, you're one of our favorite New Hampshire data nerds, Brian. So which piece of nerdy data are you looking at most closely?
Yeah, first of all, I have to say that almost all the data is positive. I focus a lot on the job market in my position as a director of the Labor Market Information Bureau, Economic and Labor Market Information Bureau. So I look at job postings. I'm looking at continuing claims for unemployment, how many people are going back to work and in what industries. I look a lot at what's happening in terms of mobility. How are people moving around in the state? Are they going back to their workplaces? Are they spending more time at home? And there's data, all data indicates that people are still not moving around as much as they did prior to the pandemic. But I have to say, I've never in 30 years of doing economic forecasting have I been so optimistic about the New Hampshire economy and what it's likely to do over the next 18 months.
Wow. Why is that, Brian? That's a big statement you just made there.
Yeah, it is a pretty bold statement. So, I may be setting myself up to crash and burn and be spectacularly wrong, but I really don't think so. It's because almost all of the indicators that I look at nationally and in the state are positive. We have strong income growth despite the pandemic. We have a large number of job openings. This is pretty amazing. Who would have thought, after we had lost 100,000 jobs, that we'd be talking about a labor shortage. There's strong demand in almost all industries. Consumers have money. There's a lot of pent-up demand. There are very few things that concern me, with some exceptions. The labor market, labor force still hasn't gotten back to pre-pandemic levels, and there's some concern about inflation. So those are things that could potentially diminish some of my optimism.
Well, I want to remind listeners that it's a New Hampshire economic roundup today, and we're going to turn now to summer tourism. As we do, Exchange listeners, what are you expecting to see in your area of the state this year? What was last year like? And if you work in this industry, what are you hoping for this summer? What are you concerned about? Let us know by email to exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call at 800-892-6477. So along with Brian Gottlob, with us now is Amy Landers, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Lakes Region Tourism Association. Amy, it's nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Laura.
So what was tourism like in the Lakes Region last year, Amy?
Well, overall, tourism was down about 14% for the year. Obviously, May and June was really tough for all of our businesses in the Lakes Region. And then as businesses opened back up in July, July through late fall was very, very strong for many businesses. However, we did still have those businesses that continue to struggle, especially with the occupancy levels and the guidelines of how many people are allowed into the business at one time.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because I remember last summer, you know, people were saying it was crazy busy in the Lakes and the Whites, but the overall numbers were softer, Amy, because earlier on, May, June, people just weren't coming. Is that it?
Yes. We lost a few months there. And so it took people some time. I mean, one of the positive things that came out of it, a lot of our businesses, especially the lodging, had early on cancellations for the April, May, June, canceling their summer reservations. But they were able to find a lot of new visitors, which is ultimately our goal. Once somebody comes here for a vacation, they're going to continue coming back and love the destination and love the state of New Hampshire. So that was the positive. We had some repeat visitors that canceled. However, we found a lot of new visitors last year that now will become repeat visitors.
Yeah, that is something I heard. Lots of people who had big trips canceled, so they came more locally to New Hampshire. What are you expecting this year, Amy?
We're expecting a very positive season ahead with both repeat as well as new visitors coming in. Reservations are up over previous years. We're hearing reports of longer stays this year. Visitors are definitely booking earlier. And so this will lead to a very strong midweek as well as off-season business. As things are filling up and they can't get those normal weeks that they're used to, they're going to be traveling at a different time, and hopefully that will fill in our spring and fall season as well.
Brian, what soft spots or concerns are you looking at for New Hampshire tourism this year?
Well, overall, just as Amy indicated, it's likely to be a very strong year in terms of demand. People are flying more, they are taking public transportation more, but still there's a preference for automobile travel, and that's likely to continue. So we expect demand will be strong. The big issue that the industry is facing now, of course, is labor supply. There are shortages. I don't know of a hospitality establishment that hasn't indicated that they are having difficulty hiring. Another issue that I think will present some difficulties is I think the differing expectations around social distancing, mask wearing, vaccinations, et cetera, I think will present a challenge. It's not something that can't be overcome, but it will be difficult, I think, for some organizations to navigate, as people just have very different, they'll be coming from different places and they just have different expectations about those actions that were undertaken during the pandemic regarding distancing, mask wearing, et cetera.
Oh, Brian, so give us an example of what you mean there, like customers from different, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, some restaurants, lodging facilities may have more strict mask wearing requirements. Individuals who come from a location where those have been relaxed may have issues with that. I think many of the organizations, hospitality organizations, have tried to make it clear upfront what their expectations are. But one of the things we've learned, and one of the troubling things we've learned, is that people don't react well to when their expectations differ from The experience that they get when they go to a restaurant or a hotel. So I think it will create some problems. Not going to reduce demand, but it will just be a challenge, I think, for a lot of organizations to manage.
Amy, how are you talking to your member organizations about, you know, conflicts among customers who are coming from all different parts of the country and their different expectations for what safety means?
Well, I think you'll find, I mean, obviously, we're very grateful that our businesses are going to be at 100% capacity, that they really have an opportunity, especially the attractions, to have a successful season this year, as well as the retail stores. I think you'll find right now that many of our businesses are still requiring masks, and they're going to stay with the same safety protocols as last summer to keep their employees safe, the families, the residents, as well as the visitors. And we hope that people will respect those businesses and what their decisions are in order to keep everyone safe this year and have a really positive season for everybody and for the visitors to enjoy their vacation at the same time.
What are the key challenges that your members are facing, Amy, in terms of finding workers this year? Brian mentioned, you know, many, many in hospitality are having a hard time hiring.
That's going to be one of our biggest issues for this season. We have been working as with all of the regional chambers and doing some virtual job fairs. So we actually have another one on the 13th tomorrow. We had one in April. We had a couple back in the November, December timeframe as well, and those have been very successful. But this will be a major issue for us. We even looked at trying to spend money advertising for jobs out of state to bring out of state workers. But the problem is the lack of housing. So even attracting somebody into the region to work for our businesses is no place to rent or no place to purchase. So we have no place that they can be housed. And as
oh my
you know,
gosh.
The international employees, our region really heavily depends on our J-1 and H-2B visas. And again, that's not looking positive for this summer season. We're very thankful for Senator Shaheen, who's been working with the Biden administration on this issue. However, with timing and the delays with this and delays with international travel, isn't looking like our members will be able to take advantage of any J-1s and H-2B visas this season.
Wow. Yeah, I know New Hampshire tourism businesses really rely in some measure on foreign workers through those programs. So what are you going to do, Amy? You can't bring in domestic workers because there's no place for them to live. The foreign programs have been, you know, not completely shut down, but limited. What are your businesses going to do?
Well, again, we're going to continue with the virtual job fairs. I know that some have been successful with that, and they're working with the state of New Hampshire and trying to find other programs and ways to get them. And so I think, you know, we are hearing people, various businesses that will have to cut back. Some of the restaurants are only offering in-house dining. They're not going to be doing takeout on the weekends because of the lack of staff, or they're shut down various sections of their business or various days of the week in order to accommodate the busiest days possible. So I think everyone's really looking at their organizational plans and structures and what is the best way to run their business successfully for this season and get through with their limited staff.
Oh, that's interesting. So your favorite restaurant might just decide to do takeout during the week due to staff limitations and then, you know, do the full service on the weekends. Brian, what are some innovative ways to fill that workforce gap that you're hearing about?
Yeah, I don't hear a lot of genuinely innovative ways. I do hear of businesses offering bonuses for workers to re-up or come back or start a new position. Certainly higher wages will have some impact. I think that one of the key things, and we haven't, not many people talking about this, is I wonder if there's not a fundamental change in shift or change in the attitude toward working in the hospitality sector. And that's a bit of a concern for me. You know, working with the public can be very difficult in a serving capacity. The pandemic hasn't made that any easier. And so I wonder if, you know, the attractiveness of some of those jobs hasn't been reduced as a result of that. People have been difficult during the pandemic. The other real challenge I see is that the industry relies a lot on youth labor, and that has been shrinking both in absolute terms, but also in the participation rate. We used to have a very high relative participation rate for young people in the labor force, and a lot of what they worked in was the hospitality industry. And young people simply aren't participating in the labor force and aren't getting jobs the way they used to during the summer. So I think those are real challenges. And if I were to argue for some policies, I'd look for ways to encourage more young people to get into the labor force or reverse that negative trend of downward participation.
Wow. So fewer young people overall in New Hampshire. And then those young people that are here aren't getting those sort of classic scooping ice cream summer jobs. Amy, what do you think about what Brian says, that some Granite Staters say, you know, to heck with hospitality work. The public is rude and unkind, and it's not worth it.
Well, I think, you know, there's so many benefits of working in the hospitality industry and meeting so many people from all over the country, and usually I'd say all over the world, but that's a little different right now. And those experiences of working with international employees or servicing people from other states and other countries, it can be really rewarding, and people really enjoy learning other people's lifestyles and hearing where they're from. And I think there's a lot of positive scenarios out there, as well as a lot of our businesses are getting repeat young people back because they've had a positive summer, and they're getting increases in their pay and increasing in benefits because they come back year after year. So I think there are some difficulties, but I think that is with every job that you find, that there's going to be some difficulties, but so many positive things that you can learn from your other employees and your visitors that brings so much to the table for all ages.
Again, I want to remind our listeners that it's a New Hampshire Economic Roundup today in the Exchange. And in this segment of the show, we're talking about summer tourism, the outlook, and a little bit later we'll talk about housing and jobs. But right now, as we focus on tourism, let us know what you expect to see in your area in terms of tourism. And especially if you work in this sector, we'd love to hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call. It's 800-892-6477. So we got an email from Dan from Up in Your Grill Food Truck and Catering Company. He was on our show about a month ago. Dan says, the catering business this year is looking spectacular. We're getting more inquiries and bookings than ever. After a hard year of isolation, people want to get together and party, and it looks like they have the funds to do it. Dan also says, my advice to listeners, if you're looking to book a caterer this year, do it soon before all the dates are booked. Dan, it's great to hear from you. And Amy, what about that? Do you have the same advice, you know, for people who might want to come to the New Hampshire Lakes region? Book it now.
Yes, for sure. And we are seeing the caterer requests, weddings, group functions are really starting to boom again. But yes, if you want to be able to have a vacation in the Lakes region, not only your lodging, because the lodging, vacation home rentals, camping is filling up very quickly, but also making sure that you're planning out your attractions and your entertainment, taking a look at what you want to do and purchasing your tickets in advance, so that you're not disappointed. There is such a demand, and there's so many things that you can be doing, but they will be selling out. So it's really important to plan ahead this year.
Well, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because there has been a conversation in tourism circles about, you know, some of those big events, like you said, Amy, get your tickets early, concert venues such as Meadowbrook in the Lakes region. Let's hear what Governor Sununu said recently about venues like theaters and just big summer events overall.
I mean, we're looking at, when we talk about the performing arts guidance that we put forth today, loosening a lot of those restrictions on capacity, or just making it a little more simpler, a little more flexible for folks. I think that there's going to be a lot of venues that, regardless of where we go with our guidance, choose to be a little even more restricted for their own behalf and for the confidence of a lot of their customers that could come through the door, not just in performing arts, but for fairs or whatever, or what have you. But those events are going to take place, and we're going to find a way to do it without a doubt. And like I said, I tell everyone to plan big, plan for a successful summer and a summer that looks more like 2019 than 2020.
Again, that's Governor Sununu recently talking about the summer tourism expectations. Amy, what about the big events that tend to draw people to New Hampshire? You know, the fairs. I've been reading some of the fairs that were canceled are on this year. I understand Motorcycle Week is on. So what's the conversation in your region about some of those big events?
I think they've been very positive. I mean, it is time to bring things back into the region in these larger events. We have some great protocols in place. The businesses have protocols. The towns, the cities have protocols to keep everyone safe. And we saw this last year, and everything with the guidelines that were put in place with the sanitation stations and hand sanitizer and all of those safety protocols will stay in place. And so now we're ready to move forward with all of these larger events and the entertainment. Arts and culture is so important, not only for the visitors, but also for the residents and everyone that's here. It brings more visitors to the area who's going to spend money eating, shopping, staying overnight, and our businesses really need that and need a successful season.
Well, and Brian, now around the country, I don't know about here in New Hampshire, but in different places around the country, some theaters and indoor venues are requiring either a negative COVID test or a vaccination card before they let people in. Are we going to see that here in New Hampshire, Brian?
I think it's unlikely. I do think that, again, there'll be varying restrictions, and those will differ according to the venue and the operator of the event. But I really, you know, it doesn't seem to me that New Hampshire is in a mood to require anything, vaccinations included. So I think it's unlikely that they'll be requiring negative tests or vaccinations at these different events.
Amy, last question for you, and then we'll let you go. We've talked to a lot of businesses over the past year, and many of us have told us that some of the changes they had to make out of necessity due to the pandemic ended up being positive innovations that they're going to stick with. What about tourism businesses, Amy? What are you hearing that they might say, you know, this actually worked pretty well for us. We're gonna stick with this protocol or this new way of doing things.
I think there's a lot of great examples of how this worked positively. You know, people really had to change their operations last year, and they did learn a lot. For example, even pre-purchasing tickets to attractions, and a lot of those attractions are going to keep that in place because it allowed them to plan better with staffing, as well as if they had food at their attraction, they were able to plan their food orders in advance. So it's really helping the overall cost of those attractions. Another great example is the Mount Washington cruise ship that was offering tableside service versus the buffet, and they found that they really have a strong clientele for that type of service that they can continue in the future. A lot of our restaurants learned a lot from outside dining and takeout, so they might have had a very limited takeout menu to start, and they really grew that business and learned how to do takeout that now it's become a really part of their business on a daily basis, along with outside dining, where they might not have ever offered outside dining. They learned how to manage their staff, manage the customers, and offer outside dining as an option that they can now continue that into the future as well.
Yeah, we've talked to restaurants about that. They've gotten really creative with those two elements. You're right, Amy. And I think the public has really embraced outdoor dining. We're pretty hardy here in New Hampshire. So what are you looking forward to most, Amy, for this summer in your region?
Oh, we're looking forward to welcoming our visitors back and having them enjoy our beautiful destination while seeing all of our businesses have an economically positive season. After so many struggles and so many stories last year and so many tears, it's really going to be rewarding to see them thrive this year and be part of that positive energy coming into the region.
Well, Amy, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thanks for all your help with tourism and our economy, Laura.
That's Amy Landers, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Lakes Region Tourism Association. So coming up, our economic roundup continues. We're going to turn to New Hampshire's hot housing market. Listeners, if you're looking to buy a home or sell, tell us what your experience has been. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call at 800-892-6477. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're checking in on the New Hampshire economy, and we turn our attention now to housing, with high prices and low inventory, making it tough for many people to find a place to live. Listeners, join us. What's your experience in the real estate market been like? And what do you think the broader economic ripple effects of this tight housing market might be? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org or call 800-892-6477. So with us for the hour is Brian Gottlob, director of the state's Economic and Labor Market Information Bureau. And with us now are Jeff Feingold, longtime editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Welcome back, Jeff.
Great to be back, Laura.
And also with us, Margaret Joyce, president of the Greater Dover Chamber of Commerce. And Margaret, nice to have you too. Thank you.
Good morning, Laura.
So let's talk about housing, all of you. And Jeff, you first. We've been hearing for a while that New Hampshire's real estate market is super hot. So what does this mean, Jeff? Is this good or bad, or can we even assign a value to it?
Well, I think at this point, we could maybe call it scary. Because it's you know, if you remember last year, even the year before, when Brian and I would be on this on the program, we would be talking about the hot real estate market. But this year, it's really gone into some kind of ultra speed or hot heat. If you think about it, our median price now for a house, for a single family house in New Hampshire, in April was $382,000, which is a lot of money when you think about that. But that was up 18% from last April.
Wow.
Which already was high, a huge jump in just 1 year. And then the other thing is that's really almost just eye-opening, at least, is that the average home is on the market for 32 days, which is about half of how long it was on the market last year, and 60 days seems like a very short time to have a house on the market. So 32 days is like a blink of an eye in real estate terms. And many of the houses are being sold for cash, and they're being sold at above the asking price, which is just usually unheard of,
unheard of. Let's bring you in. What does it look like in Dover?
Well, it's exactly as Jeff said. First of all, there is a lack of inventory that is becoming a problem. Folks coming in trying to buy a house, looking at a price point, they're getting outbid. And then the other thing is, as Jeff indicated, cash is king. People are coming in with cash offers. So availability of inventory is really a problem. And then that is just driving the offers up, and people are just getting priced right out of the market.
I just want to say one thing about the inventory. That's the other thing I was going to mention was that, as Margaret said, it's really very problematic because at this point, there's an average of about 3 weeks of inventory on the market right now in the state, which means that if no other houses came on the market, all of the houses would be sold in 3 weeks. And that's just a crazy, there's nothing, there's very little left on the market for people. And that's why prices are so high.
So Brian, what does this mean for the bigger economic picture here in the state?
Yeah, I think that there are a number of reasons why the housing market get very hot. Some of them are more pernicious than others. One of them is speculation. And I don't think our housing market is hot this time around because people are speculating on buying houses. They're not flipping. It's a very, very low level of housing flips, which is typical in a hot bubble housing market. People do a lot of flipping. But we've got a hot housing market because we have strong demand. And we have strong demand, and that's a positive indicator for the New Hampshire economy because we have a great place to live, for one thing. We have job opportunities. And during the pandemic, we've seen an increase in interest in New Hampshire. I look at one private sector source of data that measures the online views of homes for sale in different locations at the state and the county level. New Hampshire had about three times the number of average views for homes for sale than did the nation as a whole. So we know there's very strong demand. And then there's these underlying economic demographic trends. There's a lot of households being formed. A lot of young people are starting to strike out on their own. That's creating an increase in demand. And probably the biggest reason we have this this hot housing market is the fact that for a decade or more, we have really underbuilt housing in the state. So you combine the strong demand, the increased attractiveness of a state like New Hampshire with a low level of new construction, and you wind up with a housing market that's very hot. But it's not hot because of speculation. It's hot because the demand is exceeding the supply.
So it's not the bubble, Brian, that, you know, some people worry about. Is it going to burst like it back did back in 2007?
I really don't think so. One, because again, if you look at the housing bubbles in the past, one of the key factors that contributed to that is the fact that there was more units being built than there were people willing to buy them, and at the price that they were being offered. Right now, there just aren't enough units to satisfy the existing demand, and that will take quite a while to work that off. So I don't see the New Hampshire housing market as severely overvalued. That's not to say there aren't places in the country and in New England where housing isn't overvalued, but given the level of demand, given the level of interest, given our new our uptick in migration trends in the state, I don't see this market as being in a bubble.
You know, Margaret, we heard earlier from Amy in the Lakes region talking about, you know, her members wanting to hire workers for the summer tourism season, but they literally have no place to put people for them to live. How about in Dover? How are your chamber members talking about this housing crunch and its impact on their businesses?
Well, and our housing crunch is not really seasonal. We're not necessarily a tourism destination such as the Lakes region would be, or Hampton or Portsmouth. So we're not looking at seasonal workers. We're looking at year round. And it is a problem. You may have seen in the media, there was a very innovative solution. A couple in Dover actually went ahead and is planning cottage homes, have gotten the permitting. They're building a series of cottage homes. They own an assisted living facility. So it's not just hospitality industry that is struggling to get workers, it's all industries. And assisted living, getting LNAs or CNAs, people who are lower level and can't afford high apartment rates or buying houses, this is an affordable and innovative and creative opportunity. So I think the key now is looking at alternative solutions.
Wow, that's really interesting. Tell us more about that project, Margaret. So cottage housing, so these are like not tiny houses, but sort of small houses built in a cluster, or just describe that for us, please.
Correct. Yes. And that involves a community being willing to change its zoning laws. And Dover had to be willing to do that, because in the town I live, a small rural town, we've always had 2-acre minimums and so many road frontage. But that concept has to change. So these are 44 single family units on a just over 7-acre site in Dover. And the units are going to be 384 square feet. So not quite a tiny home, but basically kitchen, living, bedroom, and bath. A little front porch, a storage shed, but people will have their own homes and be able to commute to work easily, not have to go further out as we're seeing. It used to be that people who worked in Portsmouth lived in Dover because that's where they could afford it. But now people who work in Dover are having trouble affording it. So this is really quite an innovative solution.
Oh, that's interesting. And Jeff, another question for you. Last year at this time, there was lots of coverage about so-called COVID migrants, remote workers from big cities coming up, renting houses in New Hampshire, buying houses in New Hampshire. What can you tell us, Jeff, about how many of these folks might stick around and become Granite Staters?
Well, it's looking like we don't really know for sure yet, but it does look like many of them are staying. And one of the big signs is that, if they were leaving, they'd probably be selling their houses.
They're not going
on the market. And I think that really with this development, the growth of remote working, I think that that's probably a trend that's going to stay as long as they have good enough broadband in where they are. They can work there. They can work from home in New Hampshire or wherever. And you see this trend happening around the state and in other places where there are certain areas that are becoming much more attractive to people. Actually, we had a piece, and I think that you've covered this as well at NHPR, about how Manchester and Concord are becoming like are one and two in the hottest housing markets, but also because They've become places where people are living because they seem friendlier to remote working.
Yeah,
and this is something that you're seeing, that it's not just the big hubs, the big cities that are attracting people, but people outside the cities where people feel like they might have a looser lifestyle or, you know, a little less expensive.
Well, here's an email from Kevin who says, how do people afford to live independently in the Lakes region when a vast majority of the jobs are seasonal and or low paying? Kevin says, there is a house not far from where I live that is listed at $325,000 for less than 900 square feet. It's not on the water. It has no view. It has a dirt driveway. Kevin, thank you for writing. And Brian, are wages in New Hampshire keeping up with the reality of housing prices in New Hampshire?
Yeah, no, not exactly. And there's really no reason why we would expect that to occur. You know, wages are set by, you know, economic forces that aren't necessarily tied to the same forces that the housing market is. So, yeah, we are seeing, you know, in most locations, in the state of New Hampshire, that housing demand is, you know, appreciating at, I think in the most recent year, about 10% sale prices, 10 to 13%. We had the fourth highest home appreciation rate in the nation this past year in 2020. So when prices are rising and values are rising at 10 to 13%, they're just, incomes aren't just going to be able to keep up with that. Now, you know, one of the solutions that people talk about is just raising wages, but economically, that's not really possible. You can't pay people more than their marginal productivity. So a better solution, and I speak about this all the time, is that we need an increase in supply. That will help keep prices from appreciating at 10 to 13%. So on the supply side is really the way to deal with that, because we're simply not going to get people's wages to rise 10 and 13% on an annual basis.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, very few people I know are getting 10 to 13% raises for sure. Margaret, what do you think about that?
Well, one of the things that plays into that, Brian talks about, you know, an increase in inventory, and one of that could be building new houses. But part of that, what we're seeing, and Brian can refute this if I'm way off, but is an increase in materials and building costs. So it's costing more to build new homes, and consequently, that's being passed along to the buyer. A number I heard, and I'm not an economist, but is $36,000 more this year than last year to actually build a home because of increase in materials. And I don't know if that's due to COVID or if that's just the market, but that's part of the problem as well. Not only is there a lack of inventory, but trying to build new homes, it's costing more to build those new homes, and those costs are consequently passed along.
Oh, Margaret, interesting. Cost of lumber. Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
No, Margaret is absolutely right. Materials costs have risen. Just to show you how everything is connected, one of the reasons why the price of lumber has gone up is now about 50% higher than it was a year and a half ago, is the fact that we get a lot of lumber from Canada. And when we instituted increases in import tariffs, a lot of the lumber mills in Canada reduced their operations, and they're having a hard time starting those back up now. So we're seeing less supply coming from Canada. There's also some sort of invasive pest that has affected pine trees up there. But those kinds of events are beyond our control, and they have added, as Margaret said, over $30,000 to the price, average price of a new home. And it's not just lumber, but it's copper. When I talk about things that concern me, it's all on the supply side. What's driving most of our concerns.
Wow. So Margaret, last question for you, and I'll do a little preview for our next segment. We're going to look at those sectors that have yet to bounce back from the pandemic and those that have done really well over the past year in terms of jobs. From your perspective at the Dover Chamber, what parts of your local economy seem to do pretty well, even with all the challenges of the past year.
Yeah, we've seen some interesting ones, random ones. We had a local jeweler that had a banner year last year. Greenhouses, people doing, you know, their home improvements, yard work. So we have a local greenhouse that is just going gangbusters. A small retail store that pivoted really well to the online market, and because they sell local, either Dover made or New Hampshire made, it's not something that you can get on, you know, Amazon or online. So they've done extremely well. We've been fortunate. Our restaurants have struggled right along with everybody throughout the state and the nation, but a lot of them did really well shifting to the takeout concept, as Amy Landers alluded to in your earlier segment, increasing the offerings. Therefore, a lot of people had to hibernate. That's what they were calling it for the winter, and then come back in the spring. But pockets have done really well. But I would say restaurants have certainly suffered a lot of. We have a lot of here at the chamber fitness members, wellness folks. You know, you can't get a takeout massage. You can't get a takeout facial or a takeout. So those folks have really, really struggled. But there have been pockets of true success.
Wow. All right. Well, that is what we will talk about in our next segment more fully. Margaret, it's been really nice to have you on the air today. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Margaret Joyce, president of the Greater Dover Chamber of Commerce. So as I said, coming up, employment, what kinds of jobs have yet to bounce back? And we heard Margaret allude to a couple sectors there, and which have done especially well over the past year. Let's hear from you. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Send us an email. Tell us your perspective on the shifting job market here in the Granite State. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call at 800-892-6477. Today, we're checking in on the New Hampshire economy, and we'll focus now on those jobs that are expanding and those that seem to be contracting. So, Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. What changes have you seen or experienced yourself in terms of a shifting job market? What kind of jobs might not return once life becomes a little more normal? What kinds of jobs do you see as poised to take off? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, and our number is 800-892-6477. Our guests for the hour are Brian Gottlob. He's with the state's Economic and Labor Market Information Bureau, and Jeff Feingold of New Hampshire Business Review. And both of you, let's go right back to our listeners. And Ruth is calling from Wilton. Hi, Ruth, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm calling because I wonder if part of this boom in housing sales in New Hampshire, which is partly due to the availability of jobs, might be due to something called eco-migration. The term means that people who are living in climates that are increasingly affected by climate change and which are becoming almost intolerable to live in are moving to cooler climates where there are jobs available, which would be New Hampshire. For example, I live in Wilton, and in Wilton Center just recently, two large homes were sold to people who are coming from California. I don't know what their reasons are, but I think it's a good example of why New Hampshire might be economically benefiting from this because of the job availability. But whether
well,
it's
thanks,
a good
Ruth.
Thing or
yeah.
not, I don't know.
Yeah, and we could spend a whole hour talking about that. But just on the point that you bring up, what do you think, Brian? We talked earlier about COVID migrants. What about climate migrants?
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't doubt that there are individuals who that fits their reason or their rationale for moving to New Hampshire. One of the data points that I do look at, and it's with a fairly long lag, a year to 2 years, is where people are coming from. So when they move to New Hampshire, where they're coming from. And I will say that the bulk of our in-migration from the rest of the country, from other states, is primarily from other states in the Northeast. So it's unlikely that most of those individuals are escaping, you know, the climate concerns that the listener talks about. So certainly there are individuals who likely do that, but the bulk of our in-migrants come from the rest of the Northeast, and they come from for another reasons. And we have, as you mentioned, Laura, seen an uptick of COVID migrants because they're looking, for the most part, to avoid areas that have higher population density. If they're living in a city or even a more congested suburb, New Hampshire can look pretty attractive. So we're seeing, I think, much more of that than the climate migrants.
Well, Ruth, thank you for calling in. And here's an email from John, who works at Bedrock Gardens in Lee. John says, garden tourism and agritourism are enjoying a huge uptick nationally. Public gardens and local farm attractions statewide offer important connections to community in a safe outdoor environment where visitors can reemerge with the spring. He says they also offer opportunities for families to take home a part of their experience for further engagement in kitchens and gardens at home. John, I'm glad you wrote, because Jeff Feingold, boy, we have heard over the past year and a couple months that any sort of outdoor experience, you know, be it a farm, be it a garden tour, as John says, it is doing really well. So I wonder what you think about jobs in those sectors, Jeff, if you hear that, you know, they're doing well.
Yeah, actually they are. I mean, actually, just in general, just in terms of the landscape industry, it has done well ever since last year, actually.
Yeah.
Even at the height of the pandemic, because people were more at home, at staying home a lot, and they just said, I'm gonna clean up my yard, or I'm gonna install a pool, or whatever they were doing. But in general, I think that's something that a trend we've seen in New Hampshire for a long time, this growth in these kind of businesses. And I don't see any reason why I would be settling down. I mean, and the problem that I would see from this business is that I just don't think in terms of jobs, you know, that they're seasonal jobs, and they're not exactly the jobs that we're talking about in terms of growing the economy forward. But in terms of businesses, obviously, yes, there's something that's really a big contributor to, or it could become a major contributor to our tourism industry, which is a very important sector in New Hampshire.
So landscapers, Jeff, home repair, you know, farms, yep, gardens. What other types of jobs, Jeff, are expanding right now, or at least looking really solid?
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, we've talked a lot about hospitality and all that, the desperate need for workers there, but there's also a lot of jobs available in manufacturing, which has been like this for a long time. It's, you know, for skilled workers and manufacturers across the state in all kinds of different sectors have been complaining about this for a long time now, and they still see and have a need for employees, you know, in manufacturing. And another big another sector that's really seen a lot of growth is financial services. There was a story just the other day about Fidelity adding another several hundred jobs at their site in Merrimack.
Wow, and that's a lot.
A couple of thousand across the country, they've boomed in the pandemic. Companies like Fidelity, and Fidelity in particular, has really just gotten huge amounts of business since the pandemic. And another really interesting sector that's growing is the distribution sector. You know, warehousing, distribution. You know, you just see the trucks all over the place for Amazon or FedEx or UPS or whatever, distributing these things. But New Hampshire has become a place where there have been a lot of warehouses and distribution facilities opening up around the state. These very, very large complexes. There's one in Hudson being planned that would be owned by Amazon, which would be, you know, well over 1 million square feet. And it doesn't look like a trend stopping. I mean, I think it grew a lot during the pandemic with all the online shopping and that, but also it just in terms of distribution of materials to, let's say, manufacturers to retail stores and all that stuff, that's just been a massive growth in that industry in New Hampshire.
Well, it's really interesting. Yeah. And with many, many, many more people interested in shopping online, not that they weren't doing it before, but definitely the increase has gone up and people are getting used to that. And I just saw a news release this morning about from a truck drivers group saying, hey, we need a lot more truck drivers. So that's really interesting. So the other side of this coin, Brian, so Jeff described some of those jobs that, you know, are booming or, you know, staying solid. What types of jobs are struggling and maybe not going to emerge the same from the pandemic?
Yeah, well, I think we need to make the distinction between which industries are growing and shrinking and which occupations are likely to grow and shrink, because those two can be quite different. Jeff was accurate in mentioning the industries that were growing. He didn't mention professional, scientific, and technical industries, which have seen strong growth. And overall, 80% of the industries in New Hampshire saw year-over-year growth March to March, March 2020 to March 2021. So there's pretty broad-based growth. In terms of occupations, that's a little different. And industries, we know, and Jeff talked about this, the trend toward online retailing is likely to mean that there'll be fewer retail workers needed in the future. There'll be smaller and certainly smaller number of retail operations in the state. You know, things like the hospitality sector right now certainly are down in terms of their employment, but I don't see that as a fundamental shift. A lot of those jobs will come back eventually. It will be hard to get, and we're seeing that now, get people back into those jobs. But I don't fundamentally see that changing. People still will want to dine out. They'll still want to go to recreational events, et cetera. Some of the other industries that I think will maybe suffer, and it has to do with larger trends like the increase in remote work, temporary services. You know, it's a lot harder to be a temp worker, particularly in an office, if a lot of the work is being done remotely. How do you train those people?
Right.
So I think that's one of the industries. And things like some of the personal services that people talk about, certainly they've been down during the pandemic, but, you know, people still want to have their hair cut. You know, they still want to have their nails done. They still want to do those kinds of things. And I don't see that as fundamentally changing. So I think there'll be very few industries that will see a fundamental shift, a downward shift. I think it's more likely that we'll see increases in other industries.
What about, Brian, commercial real estate? We talked earlier about, you know, real estate for homes, and clearly that is as tight as can be. But what about, you know, so many office workers still staying at home, maybe not coming back? Brian, how's commercial real estate looking?
Yeah, it's, it certainly is, a more difficult environment for commercial real estate. But again, I think the effects are going to be different according to geography. For instance, if you're in, downtown Boston, or you're in a major metropolitan area, and you own or rent in a 40-story office building, I think those kinds of that kind of commercial real estate is going to be extremely stressed. But those kinds of commercial operations, some of that is going to be shifted to places like New Hampshire, you know, to more suburban and smaller cities, where instead of a 40-story office building, you may, you know, be more comfortable in a 3-story office building where you don't have to wait in line to take an elevator. So I think it'll be mixed bag. There will also be fewer retail operations, so that will have an impact. I don't see much of an impact in terms of restaurants, at least not in the long term. There may be restaurants that go out of business, but there'll be ones to replace them. Anything that serves commercial buildings in nearby vicinity, so the local coffee shops, you know, that are omnipresent around big office buildings, they're likely to suffer, and that's commercial real estate. So it will be stressed, and rents are certainly, at least in major metropolitan areas, have been falling for some time.
Here's an email I got from Steve in Concord that relates to this. Steve says, tourism is the second largest business in New Hampshire, and most people assume that with the economic reopening, hotels and motels are doing fine, but that's only partially true. Steve points out, hotels and motels that serve primarily for business travelers have been decimated and are not coming back. As a result, there are thousands of New Hampshire hospitality workers who have not been called back, and many hundreds of them are new Americans, legal immigrants who enter the hospitality market, because training is required to start. Steve, thank you for writing in. I had not thought of that. So thank you for adding that. Jeff Feingold, last question for you. What are you going to be looking at over the next couple of weeks? You know, to just let you know how the economy is doing.
It's not going to be hard to look at things. I mean, you just see it when, you know, when you look at the tourism industry, we'll be seeing the traffic returning and all that going at the toll booths and all that. And I think that's going to be a big thing. But also just in terms of, you know, what about the worker shortage? You know, how much of a problem that is that continuing to be? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? I also just want to say one other thing, Laura. I know we have very little time, but I'm really going to miss you. I wish you the best. I wish you the best, you know, in your future endeavors, because, you know, it's been a pleasure being with you all these years.
Well, you're still stuck with me for a couple more weeks, Jeff.
So okay.
Thank you very much. Jeff, thank you for your time today. We'll talk again.
Sure. Thanks.
That's Jeff Feingold. He's longtime editor of New Hampshire Business Review. And Brian, it's always good to talk to you, too. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Laura. And I echo the sentiments of Jeff. Sorry to see you go.
Well, it's great. Brian Gottlob is director of the state's Economic and Labor Market Information Bureau. Today's show was produced by NHPR News host and Exchange producer Jessica Hunt. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.